to hit the floor. Or you can tell my lips to tell my fingertips, they won't be reaching out for you no more. Don't tell my heart, my aching, breaking heart, I just don't think he'd understand.
You probably remember this country pop crossover. It was played practically everywhere when it was released 21 years ago. It also helped propel my next guest, Billy Ray Cyrus, into stardom. His follow-up albums weren't quite as successful as his first, which sold 20 million copies worldwide, but Mr. Cyrus has since shifted his focus to work on TV and, with his daughter Miley, has relaunched a career that emphasizes work and family entertainment. Now Mr. Cyrus has written a memoir where he discusses the success, the stress of fame, his faith, and how his hometown shaped him and the songwriter he is today. It's called Hillbilly Heart. It's published by Amazon Publishing New Harvest, and I'm very pleased that it brings Billy Ray Cyrus to our show today. Hello.
How you doing, sir?
I'm well. Do you think of yourself as a hillbilly? Is that word usually used in a pejorative sense?
Well, hillbilly's a frame of mind. You know, it's kind of, for me, I've always called myself a hillbilly since I was a kid.
Does everybody in Flatwoods, Kentucky do that?
No, not everyone does.
Some people punch you in the nose?
No, nobody will punch you, but... you know, it's a frame of mind. And for me, I just always call myself an old hillbilly from Eastern Kentucky, you know, that believes in our country and family and faith. And in saying that, I would like to, first of all, just say how sorry I am for the victims of the bombing in Boston.
It's shocking that anybody would do something like that.
It's unbelievable, but unfortunately in this world we live in today, it is believable. It's a hatred that's just got to be stopped, and I would just like to say how sorry I am for not only the people of Boston, but our entire country and our world. We've got to start loving instead of hating, or we're going to self-destruct.
Well, getting back to your hometown, you grew up in a time when you probably had radio and television that was influenced pretty much the same that we got everywhere else. Was there music there that was different?
Oh, there was all kinds of music that was different. That's, honestly, why my music is so diverse. I was raised on everything from Southern gospel to the bluegrass of Bill Monroe and Earl Scruggs. And, on the radio, you pick up the Grand Ole Opry. And I always loved, stone cold, straight up country music. And I loved Southern rock and roll. And I loved Led Zeppelin and ZZ Top and Pink Floyd. There's always a great abundance of different styles of music. And I quite frankly, I love them all.
Your grandfather, Eldon Lindsay Cyrus, was a preacher. Mm-hmm. You say that he came to religion after hearing a calling from God. Didn't you come to music in a similar way?
Well, I heard a calling. I heard of something inside. It could be a voice. It could be an intuition. It could be that knowing inside. It could be an instinct. It could be a lot of things. Part of the reason I wrote the book was I was in search of the answer myself as to exactly what is that. But I do know that for my grandfather, yes, he heard a calling. He had a calling that that he was supposed to put himself in the ministry for God. I felt my calling was for God in the way to live for His light and His love, and that through my music and my life, I would, find my purpose.
Well, weren't you a promising baseball prospect at the time?
I was,
Couldn't you have done all of that as a what position did you play?
I played catcher. I was going to be the next Johnny Bench for the Cincinnati Reds.
But then you heeded the calling, started your own band, and that took over your life. It also led to you breaking up with your girlfriend, quitting baseball. Couldn't you have done both? Or all three?
This was my purpose, my manifest destiny. This is what I was supposed to do, and it was trade in your catcher's mitt for a left-handed guitar. Ironically, 10 years later from the day I did, well, 10 years from the time I did that, not exactly the exact day that I retired from baseball, but 10 years later, after not picking up my catcher's mitt, I put it back on in 1992 in the spring. I put that. My dad drove my glove down from Kentucky, where I grew up. He drove my catcher's mitt down. I put it on, and the next pitch that was thrown into that catcher's mitt was from Nolan Ryan. And it was a benefit for St. Jude's Children's Hospital. So the next ball that mitt caught, I got behind the plate, squatted down, and Nolan Ryan hummed one in there. And instantly I remembered what it felt like for my hand to sting from a fastball.
But catchers actually wind up often with broken fingers, so you wouldn't have been able to play guitar all that well.
My knees still hurt to this day.
From the crouch.
Yeah, that's right.
Now, I assume you started singing like so many people did in your grandfather's church. Mm. Songs like Old Time Religion, The Great Speckled Bird, In the Garden.
Old Rugged Cross, Amazing Grace, How Great Thou Art. There was I'll Fly Away. It was Southern gospel, feel-good music. And that kind of paralleled a lot of that feel-good bluegrass that my other papaw played. My papaw Castro played the fiddle, and he was more of a ragtime bluegrass kind of player, and so I had an abundance of both of those styles of music. Saturday night was feel good night, and Sunday morning was, you know, praise the Lord.
Your father played in a group called the Crownsman Quartet.
That's right.
What kind of music did they play?
They played Southern gospel. The only instrument in the group was also their percussion, was a piano, and so it was a piano and four harmonies, four part harmony, and that's where I fell in love with harmony.
And then your parents divorced when you were about 11. Was that unusual during that time in northeastern Kentucky, especially with couples that had strong ties to the church?
Yeah. And early on, when my parents got divorced, there was a time I was the only kid that's mom and dad was divorced. And so that kind of made me an outsider at that time. I just didn't fit in, and I could kind of hear the whispers. And, you know, it changed life. I became much more serious than a little boy should be at that age. And
didn't you get into fist fights with some of the guys your mother brought over?
I did. I got in a few fist fights, and I was pretty wild. I'd kind of forgotten about some of those things, and a lot of memories. As part of the therapy of writing this book was unlocking some of those closets that were painful and looking inside of things that maybe I'd tried to forget.
Well, you tell a story about the time your mother had a quarrel with Pete Rose. The Pete Rose.
The Pete Rose. It was my third trip through his autograph line at a car dealership where he was signing autographs. And third time through, I think he thought that was enough. And he gave me a little cussing, and my mom gave him a cussing, and she started whacking me on the head and shouting stuff at Pete and pulled me out and threw me in the car. And again, I didn't know which was worse. Seeing Pete Rose get cussed out or me get beat up by my mom.
So do you don't think he should make it into the Hall of Fame?
I think he should. I think he should be in the Hall of Fame. Honestly, I'm a Pete Rose fan, and that didn't affect me at all. You know, it's like I'm still a big Pete Rose fan, and I think he earned every right to be in the Hall of Fame.
Your father became a congressman.
He was a state representative for the 98th District in eastern Kentucky.
So you didn't move to the state capital?
No.
Lexington, is it?
No, Frankfort, Kentucky.
Frankfort. You see, I don't have all my state capitals.
But I used to love to go there as a kid when I started going, because they had all kinds of stuff about Daniel Boone. And I was always fascinated with Daniel Boone and the Shawnee Indians. And I even loved the television show, you know, Daniel Boone. And you know, it was just, to me, history always fascinated me, and I love to find Indian artifacts and arrowheads and look up the dates when they was made and what people, you know, what time period that would have been made and by whom.
Your father was something of a populist as a politician. Do you think that crossed over into your work, your songs? Because there's a populist side to your singing.
Thank you. My dad was a people's person. You know, he loved people. He loved helping people. I've often said that helping people was, to my dad, what music is to me. It was, he felt that was his calling. And for both of us, in both instances, it was about living for the light and representing hope.
My guest is Billy Ray Cyrus. He's written a memoir called Hillbilly Heart. It is published by New Harvest. You started your first band, Sly Dog. It was a cover band?
Well, we played... I started writing songs originally, you know, from the time I bought the guitar and started the band. But, yeah, we started, yeah, with enough cover songs that I could get a job and go play somewhere. But I always immediately started bringing in the originals.
Well, but cover bands were a lot more popular in the 80s than they are now. Mm-hmm. Everybody expects original material. Today, maybe you sing one song that somebody else wrote. But do you think that you learned something from doing that?
Absolutely. I mean, what I learned and the way that I, you know, immediately I was being paid to learn. I got a job as a house band 4 or 5 nights a week, 4 sets a night. So it wasn't an option, am I going to sit and practice in my room tonight? That wasn't the case. It was like, I got a job. I'm going to go get on stage and play my guitar and sing my songs and learn to entertain people.
And then get a record contract. So you went to Mercury Records to try to get a meeting. Can you tell us about what happened?
Yeah, in brief, it was the whole decade was a story of, you know, I failed many, many more times in getting a record deal than I succeeded.
Well, Mercury Records had a reputation for not paying its artists. Had it cleaned up its act at this point?
Well, I was just looking for a record deal. The payment at that point really wasn't part of the equation. It was more about, you know, after 10 years of being told no, 10 years of persistence. And again, I've failed many, many more times in getting a record deal than I succeeded. But after 10 years, I'd written a song called Some Gave All, a song I wrote about a Vietnam veteran. And I went to Nashville again based on that instinct or that voice within saying, this is the song. Go play this for Harold Shedd. And if he says yes, it's meant to be. If he says no, you might be supposed to do something else. I played him the song, and he said, I'm going to structure you a little deal. And that began my contract with Mercury Records and started recording that very song, Some Gave All, which became the title track of the album.
And it was about the Gulf War.
It was really written about a Vietnam veteran that I met back in Huntington, West Virginia in 1989, but ironically, I cut it in January of 1991, the very day the Gulf War started.
So people made that connection. But that wasn't the single that was released. It was Achy Breaky Heart,
that's right,
which wasn't even planned for the album.
It was a year, yeah. Actually, by the time we cut Some Gave All in January and in first week of June, we cut 9 more songs. Achy Breaky Heart was one of those 9. And then even that Achy Breaky Heart wouldn't come out until the spring of 1992. So a whole year passed from the time that I recorded Some Gave All till it came out in May of 92.
What do you feel now when you hear Achy Breaky Heart?
I think it's still fun. I still love to play it. I still love the excitement and the joy and the when people dance, when people sing, and when people feel good joined together in the momentum of a song, it becomes a celebration. And as we've seen today and every day, you see life is pretty heavy. There's a lot of bad news out there, and there's a lot of sad news. Quite frankly, I write a whole lot more sad songs than I write happy ones. But every now and then, people just like to feel good, and Achy Breaky Heart is one of those kinds of songs.
And the album debuted as #1 on the pop and country charts, went on to sell 20 million records worldwide. But Achy Breaky Heart divided a lot of country music fans. They didn't like the fact that it all crossed over into pop. One of the first things you include in your book is a note from Johnny Cash encouraging you not to listen to those critics. Did you feel redeemed at all, or the fact that Bruce Springsteen has performed that song in concert?
Of course it meant the world, you know, when I saw Bruce Springsteen play the song, and I think he said, it's just a damn good little rock and roll song. And that's, quite frankly, that's a really good definition of that. It's just a damn good little rock and roll song. And, you know, the letter from Johnny Cash, invaluable. That's why, you know, I felt it was, that was the perfect way to start my story. I thought it was kind of neat that Johnny Cash speaks in the book before I do.
What about the acting career? How did that happen? You didn't train to be an actor. You wind up in David Lynch's Mulholland Drive.
Yeah, I played life by ear, same way I play music. You know, I go by the feel and kind of, you know, I'm always trying to look for what direction. I love to learn, love to, you know, always be trying to learn something new, move forward. And my dad had suggested, you know, maybe I get into acting and have one of those Kenny Rogers, Dolly Parton careers. And so, I said, well, how do you do that? And he said, well, first of all, you got the first part. You've had a hit crossover record, pop and country. And obviously with Dolly, Islands in the Stream, Kenny, Lady, and so many. You know, he said, you got the music part down. Now branch out into acting. And the David Lynch movie came up and a couple other things.
And then Doc on cable. You start alongside your daughter in Hannah Montana.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And your kids have followed in your footsteps, Noah and Miley. Also doing singing as well.
Yeah, they sing. They kind of, I encourage my kids to follow their dreams. Whatever it is that they like to do that is where their passion is of, you know, that artistically. Or my little girl, Noah, she rides horses. She's an equestrian rider, and she's really, she's quite good at it. She's 13 years old now. Last year, I think she was the number one rated 12-year-old equestrian rider in the state of California.
So all the kids are successes.
Well, they do all right. You know.
A plot line in
as long
Hannah.
As they're happy is all I care about.
There was a plot line in Hannah Montana that revealed that your character used to be a heartthrob country rock star named Robbie Ray. Mm-hmm. When you look back at things like the Achy Breaky Heart music video, do you see the person performing in the music video as a character? Or is it still you?
That guy on that stage, it couldn't be changed. It was me. That was what I looked like. That's what I sounded like. That's the music that I was making. That was basically a guy. That's what I was doing, and it was important to me to keep my sound. You may know they suggested I make that video in a disco in Nashville. And I said, hey, man, I've been working for 10 years for this chance. Let my one chance be real. And the realism would come up to where I'm from in Eastern Kentucky. There's an old abandoned theater up there called the Paramount. Let's open it up and just capture the realism of what's going on. And that's what we did.
And now you've written a memoir.
And that's right. Now I've written this book. And the book is a whole lot like the songs. It ain't always pretty, but it is the truth.
Well, we're going to go out with I Want My Mullet Back. Is that autobiographical?
It's a song I actually wrote a few years ago about Johnny Damon. I was watching, he was playing for the Red Sox at the time, and I noticed he had a mullet, and I thought, wow, man, that's a simpler time. You know, life wasn't so serious then, and I said, I want my mullet back, and I wrote the song. It became a big record and big fun, man. It's just a good time.
Billy Ray Cyrus's memoir is called Hillbilly Heart. It's published by New Harvest. Thank you so much for being
Thank
with
you.
Us.
It's an honor to be with you.
Skipping school, I remember packing that old fishing.